हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
They were all self-realized souls, and they knew perfectly well how all living beings in the state would be happy, both in this life and in the next. They were not concerned with the hedonistic philosophy of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. They were philosophers in the real sense, and they knew well what is the mission of human life. Page 5.
I think we have page 6 now.
Page 6?
Yes.
Oh, so I didn't move this. Oh, I see. That's what. Okay. We're on page 6?
Okay.
Shonaka and the rishis were astonished to hear that the pious Maharaj Pariksit simply punished the culprit and did not kill him. Shonaka Rishi inquired, why did Maharaj Pariksit simply punish him, since he was the lowest of Shudras, having dressed as a king and having struck a cow on the leg? Srila Prabhupada explains, this suggests that a pious king like Maharaj Pariksit should have at once killed an offender who wanted to cheat the public by dressing like a king and at the same time daring to insult the purest of the animals, a cow. The rishis in those days, however, could not even imagine that in the advanced days of the age of Kali, the lowest of Shudras would be elected as administrators and will open organized slaughterhouses for killing cows. Right? So he says in the advanced days, so you can understand we're in the advanced days. Right, so this is their point, is that they can't understand how this would happen. It just wouldn't happen. Right? Because in the previous day, everyone respects the cow, everyone acts according to their position, and definitely lower than a common person would not take the position of being a king, and then at the same time be harassing a cow, right? Because kings protect cows; they don't harass them. So just the whole concept to them was not understandable. Yes.
How does that work?
Means how does he harass the cow?
I mean, the sages.
How does he dress up?
The sages are very learned, obviously.
Yes.
They know from previous time they were demoniac kings who cut trees down and did kill the cows and the Brahmins. You know, Kashyapu's mother.
But that was only
the surprise coming from?
That because there you have, see, Hiranyakashipu is quite powerful. You know, he's coming from good lineage and everything like this. He's misusing his position. Like that, Ravana also is a very high grade Brahmin, but misusing his position. But what they would do as far as his managing of the universe, they didn't find that there was a difficulty there. It's just that he, Hiranyakashipu, to bother the demigods, then you bother anything that will give them power. So it was more of a political move that if you want to bother a person, you bother everything around him. You know, or weaken a person, you weaken everything that supplies them. So it's understandable from the political and their position, but it's not right. But here it's that you have lower than a Shudra, so that's understandable. They can accommodate that. But then dressed as a king, and then harassing a cow? And what's the point? Right, so nothing's gained. Nothing, there's no, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay.
Continue. Please describe all these incidents if they are related to the topics of Lord Krishna. Right, so that's the point. If it's related to Krishna, they want to hear about it. If it's not, they just don't want to hear. Right? Unless there's some minimal thing, but as far as explanation. That's what I mentioned the other day. Prabhupada mentioned about Nala and Damayanti. He says we have nothing to do with Nala and Damayanti because there's no connection to Krishna at any point. We can make some connection ourselves, but the story itself does not connect. Right? But the devotees of the Lord are accustomed to licking up the honey available from the lotus feet of the Lord. What is the use of topics which simply waste one's valuable life? Because any topic, anything, they create some scar, and then that's left, and you have to deal with that. You can say it's nice at the time, but the point is it doesn't just go away at that time, it continues on. Like that. 6. Srila Prabhupada describes Shonaka Rishi's mood. Although hearing about a Shudraka, who was a cheat and insulter of a cow, was not very interesting to the great Rishis, they nevertheless wanted to hear about it to see if the event had any connection with Lord Krishna, because Parikshit Maharaj is there. And so he's connected to Krishna. So if there's anything in that particular pastime that is, if it's just a matter of he's punishing a criminal and that's it, then they don't need to hear any more. But if there's going to be something related to the Lord, then they're interested. They were simply interested in the topics of Lord Krishna. For anything that is dovetailed with the narrations of Krishna is worth hearing. There are many topics in the Bhagavatam about sociology, politics, economics, cultural affairs, etc. But all of them are a relation with Krishna, and therefore all of them are worth hearing. Right? So the technical details of all these areas of sociology, politics, economics, cultural affairs, these are another shastras that have a connection. You can find a connection. But it's not their description is the connection. Does that make sense? Bhagavatam, the description is the connection. So it's different. So in other words, details are there. We're taking it that's the technical part, that's the difficult part, this is the easy part. No, this is the difficult part. The technical is the easy part. If the philosophical, pure devotional service was so easy, you know, why aren't our great philosophers and thinkers of the world doing that? No, they're into technical. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if we put up, you know, Madison Square Gardens, we're going to have a program on pure, unalloyed devotional service. How many people will show up? Right? But if you put on some technical thing on managing the stock market for your benefit, it'll be a full house. You understand? Yes.
Mara, sometimes we see during Bhagavatam class, and it's actually mentioned right in the beginning of Bhagavatam that all the Kaitala Dharma is kicked out.
Yes.
But we see during Bhagavatam class, people bring, you know, so many topics, and it's not necessarily connected to the main topic.
Not so. But the point is as long as they're connecting it to Krishna, then it works. In other words, they'll speak according to their understanding, their ability, their realization. You know, so in other words, the verse does something that reminds them of something that may be connected or may be very indirect, but as long as they connect it to Krishna, then it works. You know, if they don't connect it to Krishna, then that's a weakness. You know, if it's used as a political forum or other things, then that's a problem. But if it's a matter of establishing Krishna consciousness, even if it's not on the verse, then at least it's connected to Krishna. You know, it's like what was it, that point was made yesterday about that people were criticizing the Krishna in an article. And the devotees were very upset. And Prabhupada asked, well, how many times did they mention Krishna? You know, he says, so that many times, that's as good, that's how good the article is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But now if one can speak on the topic, that's better. But at least if one's talking about Krishna, then it's fine. It works. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
Krishna is the purifying ingredient in all matters, regardless of what they are. So that's really essential. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes perfect. This is the Yukta Vairagya. Right? But it's not just a matter of I use anything that I like. It's the connection to Krishna that makes it Yukta Vairagya. It's not that I'm a devotee and anything I use automatically becomes Yukta Vairagya. No, it's whatever you use, you connect it to Krishna, that's Yukta Vairagya. Right? Fine distinction. Right? So the point is anything can be connected. Right? And now when we say anything, generally the mind runs to sinful activities. Well, what about that? It says there is a method to connect it. But the point is you're connecting first to Brahman. It's the sinful activity. It's attractive because of Krishna's potency, not because of the dead matter you are attracted to. Right? Dead matter does not give any interest to the soul. It's Krishna's potency in the dead matter that does. So therefore, if one understands that, then one moves forward with Krishna, then wouldn't it be better to get from Krishna as a person directly rather than the impersonal? Right? Because the Bhagavatam we see, it immediately moves up to the personal. So just the element that the Brahman level, the Paramatma level is enough, that's also kicked out right in the beginning. It's very, very, it's very pointed. Pure devotional service is all that is accepted. And we will make concession for Nishkam Karma Yoga, as long as its purpose is to please Krishna. Then you can make some concession there. Not that it's great or good. It's just, it's in pursuance of pure devotion. Okay, we can accommodate it. Right? So that's the point. Because the only connecting sinful things to Krishna through the Brahman platform is connected to Krishna. You will be purified. You can get liberated, but you'll never get bhakti. Bhakti comes because you're trying to please Krishna as a person. Therefore, it's not recommended. Right? The point is, if you want to please Krishna, you start with pious activities. Because Krishna is pure, he likes piety. Right? It means, in other words, he is piety. So it has to be something that's on the same level that he socially likes to interact with. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yes.
So is pious things enough, or does it?
No, it's not enough. It's your medium.
Yeah, but is it enough to get bhakti, or does it have to be like Vedic things? Like,
no, but what do you mean by pious? What in the West is pious? Okay, you helped the old lady across the street, okay? Then you gave some charity down at the local orphanage. And then? Did we miss something?
No.
No, okay. So then, what else is pious?
Well, okay, not necessarily pious, but not impious either.
But what does that mean, not impious?
Well, people wearing their Western Kami clothes and things like that is kind of neutral. Or eating their Western food or...
The thing is, who does the food belong to?
Krishna.
And you're eating it.
Yeah.
And then? But do they recognize as Krishna's?
We'll just say they do.
Okay. Then great. How many do?
So is that an...
Okay, Roman Catholics, East Orthodox, Orthodox Jews, even some, what do you call it? What's in the middle? Not the Reform. What are the guys in the middle? You got Orthodox, you got Reform. Huh? No, there's something in the middle. Can't remember the name. Oh well. Whatever it is. You know, or even some of that, they may recognize. Like that. Buddhists sometimes offer. I remember seeing in Buddhist restaurants they'd cook the food and offer it to the deity of Buddha and then serve.
But, I'm talking about devotees.
Oh, you should say that in the beginning.
Sorry.
Then it's neutral. It's just, its point is, but why? What's the reason they're doing it? So the point is it's like this. I take a rock, I throw it up. How long does it go up?
1 second.
Okay. And how long does it stay just in space?
Like a fraction of a second?
Yeah, before falling. So that means it's either going up or it's going down. That's the process.
Okay.
You're either going up or you're going down. So whatever you're doing, it's either helping you go up or it's taking you down, one or the other. Neutral means it's pious, but it's not, it's recommended by Shastra, but you're not connecting it to Krishna.
Okay.
Like a smarta doing his daily activities, other than worship of demigods and that, that's called neutral. Right? You know, here, Shudraka is not neutral. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is there has to be a reason. Otherwise, then you're being bound by it. If you're wearing karmic clothes and don't have a reason other than you're comfortable, you want to fit in, you like it, then it's not, you're not doing well by it. There must be some reason to connect to Krishna. You connect it to Krishna, it's purifying. You don't connect to Krishna, it's not purifying. It's simple. This is the whole thing. The Bhagavatam is showing that. What's connected to Krishna is worthwhile. What's not, is not. It's that simple. You know, so it doesn't matter if they're a devotee or not. You connect it to Krishna, you get benefit. You don't connect to Krishna, you don't.
Okay, but you said that you get purified and you get liberation, but not bhakti, so...
That's if you're connecting it. That's what this whole discussion was about.
Okay, but until you wear a sari and a dhoti, then it's not bhakti? Is that
no.
Okay. Just connecting.
It's why you're connecting it.
Okay.
Right? See, and also in this is that there's a difference between someone just living their lifestyle. They come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they continue their lifestyle. And they add to it some Krishna consciousness, because that's all it is. There's a generic Western lifestyle. You know, it's like getting up in the morning, your coffee, your breakfast, you know, going on some idiot transport for God only knows how long, going to work or school, right? Either one, a slaughterhouse, and then coming back in the afternoon, right? And either there's a little recreation, the kids stop off and do something, or they stop at the pub, right? And then they come home, right? You talk, eat, watch some television, go to bed, right? Again, did I miss something? No, okay. Okay. Right? You understand?
Is that going out with the dog?
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's a generic lifestyle. And so now in most religions, at least in your Western religions, then you're just adding some, you go to church, or, you know, that's it. Or, you know, you might say grace before you eat, or you might say some prayers before you go to bed. We're getting really extreme here. You know what I'm saying? And so that's it. So then they may in the beginning think Krishna consciousness. I just add a little like that. Okay, changes my food. I offer it, you know, and I chant. And I go to the temple. And that's it. So fine. But they're not making a philosophy out of it. So we're not talking about them. We're talking about those who say, you know, it's fine, that they're a false idea of Yukta Vairagya, and then telling others that they should also do the same, and if you try to upgrade yourself, then they say that's fanatic or unnecessary. You know, you can just remain, you know, as culturally as a malecha, and it's fine. That's what we're talking about. Okay? So, and this is from now until the end of the course. You understand? So that's the, what do you call it? The caveat, you'd say. Like that. So Bhagavatam is about pure devotional service. So it's defining what is pure and what's not. You know? And then within that, you have to define what's pious and what's not. So real piety is it's connected to Krishna. Impiety means it's not connected to Krishna. Now within impiety, there is that which is recommended by Shastra and that which is not. Does that make sense? So that's the view we're using.
I guess I got confused about which piety we're speaking about. The material piety or the spiritual.
Even we're talking about the material, when it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes real piety. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's not real piety. That's what Prabhupada, in describing these things, at some point he then says, real, whatever he's talking about. That means he's got real administrators, means one that's connected to Krishna. There are people who can administrate, but real ones are who connected to Krishna. Right? And then if you're connecting it to Krishna, you naturally want to improve its quality. So since Krishna follows the rules of Shastra, then if I want to please him and I want to associate with him, why wouldn't I also make that attempt? But if I say, I'm not going to follow the rules of Shastra, it's not necessary. But at the same time, I'm going to go to the spiritual world and hang out with Krishna. Is that, what's the common ground?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I take a socialite and a techno geek, you okay? Now I put them together in the same room. Now what? That's the point. Nothing.
The geek's happy.
Not really. Because there's this, you know, starting to start all kinds of superficial conversations. You understand? So the point is there's nothing in common. What's the common ground? You say it's for Krishna, but it's actually for yourself. Yukta Vairagya means using it in my service. But Yukta Vairagya actually means using it in Krishna's service. So that means according to how he likes it. Does that make sense? You know, it's like there has to be something common. Right? I think it's Aesop's Fables. They have a story. Right? That there was this, I think it was a bird, stork, a big long beak. And I'm not sure what the other animal was, but it was some regular furry animal.
Fox?
Huh?
Fox?
It was a fox.
Fox, it was a fox.
Okay. And they were friends. Okay, so one invites the one over to the house. So when the fox goes over to the stork's house, and he serves soup in this big, long, yard of soup, kind of thing. And so the fox can't do anything with it. He can't get at it. But because it's long, then the stork can stick its nose in and get at it. Doesn't have a problem with it spilling. And then when he invites to the other house, the other gives him like a flat kind of plate thing, And so then the stork can't eat. You understand? So where's the common ground? That's the whole point. Friendship means common ground. So if it's not about doing it for Krishna on his terms, how can it be called pure devotional service?
I agree.
You understand? So the point is it's not a problem if people don't do that. It's a problem if they profess that you don't have to do that. You understand? It's understood that the beginning stages of devotional service is not necessarily pure devotional service. It may be, but generally it's not. Right? So then by practice, it becomes. Why? Because then Krishna becomes the center rather than ourselves. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay.
Krishna is the purifying ingredient in all matters, regardless of what they are. In the mundane world, everything is impure due to its being a product of the three mundane qualities. Right? So everything's impure. It doesn't matter how nice it is, it's impure because no mode is pure. Because if it was pure goodness, it wouldn't be here. So there must be some passion and ignorance. The qualifying, it's like the nakshatras, Brahma, these are the top, as good as it gets. Goodness of goodness, but it's not pure goodness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The purifying agent, however, is Krishna. Lord Krishna and his devotees are both on the transcendental plane. Therefore, the topics of Lord Krishna and of his pure devotees are equally good. The battle of Kurukshetra is full of politics and diplomacy because the topics are related with Lord Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is therefore adored all over the world. There's no need to eradicate politics, economics, sociology, etc., which are mundane to the mundaners. To a pure devotee who is actually related with the Lord, such mundane things are transcendental if dovetailed with the Lord and his pure devotees. So there's not the thing that we have to get rid of these things, and it's not a matter of these things on their own have a basis. Whatever is connected to Krishna becomes worthwhile. If it's not connected, then it becomes useless. Osuta Goswami, Shonaka Rishi continued. There are those among men who desire freedom from death and get eternal life. They escape the slaughtering process by calling the controller of death Yamaraj. As long as Yamaraj, who causes everyone's death, is present here, no one shall meet with death. The great sages have invited the controller of death, Yamaraj, who is the representative of the Lord. Living beings who are under his grip should take advantage of hearing the deathless nectar in the form of his narration of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Lazy human beings with paltry intelligence and a short duration of life pass the night sleeping and the day performing activities that are for naught. 7-9. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, how can we hear the auspicious talks about Krishna if we are perishable? In this place, there is animal sacrifice, with death as the executioner. Death has been called for that. Then what happens? No one dies. Then what should men do? They should drink the nectar of the Lord's pastimes. Anything other than hearing about the Lord is useless. Srila Prabhupada writes, a living being is eternal by constitution. He is, so to speak, in the whirlpool of birth and death due to his contact with material energy. Freed from such material energy, a living entity is liberated and is eligible to return home, back to Godhead. Those who want to live forever without changing their material bodies should not waste valuable time with topics other than those related to Lord Krishna and his devotees. The surest remedy for avoiding death is to accustom oneself to hearing the nectaring pastimes of the Lord, as they are systematically narrated in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so whatever it is you're looking for, if you connect it to Krishna, then it's available. Right? But if you try to get anything without connecting to the Lord, because what you're looking for is coming from the Lord, it'll be a waste of time. That makes sense? In other words, yes. You'll get benefited, you'll get the material benefit, because you're recognizing it's coming from the Lord. So you get. Right? But it's still going to be mundane. Yes?
Maharaj, can we say that hearing is a brahminical like quality? Because some people, they just can't, you know, they have to do something. They can't just sit and hear.
Yeah. But it just means that it's, you know, mode of goodness. It means the other elements are there more. But at the same time, you also have, if by movement you can hear, then that's also sometimes a symptom of goodness.
By movement, yes.
Because air is peaceful when it moves. Right? So therefore you find some, by walking when they chant, they're able to focus better than if they sit. So that you have that element. You know. But if it's not, then if it's just movement without hearing about Krishna, then it's not so important. Then it's restlessness, so then there's desire and other things. But Prabhupada mentioned if someone is restless, then read.
Read?
Yeah, because then by reading you get knowledge, you get understanding, you get purified, then you'll become less restless. I think Prabhupada in Japan told that to Shatadanya. Verse 10-24. Maharaj Parikit tours his kingdom and Dharma, religion, questions the earth. In verses 10-24, Suta Goswami relates how after Maharaj Parikit receives the influence of the age of Kali within his kingdom, he initiates a tour to defeat Kali. While touring, Maharaj Parikit hears the glories of his great relatives, the Pandavas. Dharma, who is wandering in the form of a bull, questions the earth, in the form of a cow, about the cause of the earth's current miserable condition. In the previous section, Sonaka Rishi inquired, why did Maharaj Parikit simply punish but not kill the personality of Kali, who is the lowest of the Shudras? Suta Goswami answered, while Maharaj Parikit ruled from his capital, Hastinapur, the symptoms of Kali Yuga began infiltrating his kingdom. When he came to know that some of his subjects were taking up meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication, which are the root causes of all kinds of quarrel, the news was most unpalatable. At the same time, as a Kshatriya, Bhrigat felt enlivened at the prospect of taking these miscreants to task for polluting his kingdom, which included the entire planet. So he's just worried about what's happening in his kingdom. It just happens to be the whole planet. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, "The news was not palatable for him, but in a way it was, because Maharaj Bhrigat got a chance to fight." Right? Because it's one of their natures. It's things that they're there in the position to correct what's incorrect. So when there's a chance to do it, they take it up. But that it's there in the first place is not good. Right? So that's the first response. But since you have to deal with it, they're inspired to take that up.
Right?
Yes.
When there is a fighting, it's indicated that the beginning is never good.
Generally, like you see Yudhishthira and others, they're not so enthusiastic about it. Right? Like Bhima might be, but it's not about the fighting, it's about what he can do to Duryodhana.
Yes.
It's more about that. You have a,
yes, definitely.
So does that mean if the leader, he kind of doesn't like to take, you know, the fight, you know, to eradicate a improper situation, he's not really a Kshatriya?
Good chance. Because here, see, the motive passion, the symptom, as Manu mentions, is the desire, the enthusiasm to take up new activities. Right? But then the problem is you can't finish them. Because the finishing, that's, in other words, motive passion is nectar in the beginning, bitter at the end. Right? While motive goodness is bitter at the beginning, nectar at the end. Right? So the Kshatriyas has both of these, the goodness and passion. Therefore, they can enthusiastically take up and they can conclude it. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, so that's why you generally see, even in Vaishyas, higher grade Vaishyas who have more money, generally there's more goodness in their lifestyle and personality. Otherwise, how do they conclude something? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The news not was palatable for him in a way, but in a way it was, because Maharaj Bhrigat got a chance to fight. There was no need to fight with small states, because everyone was perfect peaceful under his subordination. But the Kali Yuga miscreants gave his fighting spirit a chance for exhibition. A perfect Kshatriya king is always jubilant as soon as he gets a chance to fight, just as a sportsman is eager when there's a chance for a sporting match. It is no argument that in the age of Kali such symptoms are predestined. If so, then why was their preparation for fighting out such symptoms?" Right? Because otherwise, it's Kali Yuga. You know, why worry about it? Or it's Kali Yuga, we can do nothing about it. Or it's Kali Yuga, why even try? You know, or this, you know, how you say, you know, like that. So this is the point. "Such arguments are offered by lazy and unfortunate men. In the rainy season, rain is predestined, and yet people take precautions to protect themselves." Right? You know, when it's hot, they get the AC. When it's cold, they get a heater. When they're hungry, they get food. Right? You know, so this whole idea is, oh, it's Kali Yuga. You know, we don't need to do anything. You know, then don't do anything on anything. Just sit under a tree and chant. Then it makes sense. "Similarly, in the age of Kali, the symptoms, as above mentioned, are sure to infiltrate into social life. But it is the duty of the state to save the citizens from the association of the agents of Kali." Right? So this illicit sex, mediating, gambling, and intoxication, these are Vedic principles. And they are the ones that are always targeted. So if you want to break things down, you introduce them. You want to improve things, you remove them. This is not something that Srila Prabhupada introduced. This is, as we saw, Manu mentions it. The scriptures mention these things. So that's why he called it the agents of Kali. It means that's how he gets his work done, is through these things. "Maharaj Bhrigat wanted to punish the miscreants indulging in the symptoms of Kali, and thus save the innocent citizens who are pure in habit by culture and religion." So the main point is why it's so bad that people who are not following properly preach, is because then it affects those who are innocent. right? Because, see, the innocent people could go either way. By good association, they'll be good. By bad association, they'll be bad. Bad people will be bad. If they have really, really good association over a long period, you may be able to correct it. So therefore, there's a great effort made to keep the innocent pure. Right? It is the duty of the king to give such protection. And Maharaj Prickett was perfectly right when he prepared himself to fight. Right? Because he's fighting for a cause. He's protecting his people. He mounted his chariot marked with the flag of a lion and drawn by black horses, leaving Hastinapur surrounded by his army. Maharaj Prickett boldly set out to conquer any and all regions of the world that defied Vedic Dharma. 11. Srila Prabhupada comments. Maharaj Prickett is distinguished from his grandfather Arjuna, for black horses pulled his chariot instead of white horses. He marked his flag with the mark. He marked his flag with the mark of a lion, and his grandfather marked his with the mark of Hanumanji. A royal procession like that of Maharaj Prickett, surrounded by well-decorated chariots, cavalry, elephants, infantry, and band, is not only pleasing to the eyes, but also is a sign of civilization that is aesthetic, even on the fighting front. Right? You know, so everything is nice. I mean, we see even in the older cultures, there was more fanfare with these things. And even you see older weapons, you know, they were, you know, like, how you say, ivory handles inlaid and really nicely done, you know, decorative, you know, engraving like this. So before, everything was like that. And as the time comes, it gets less and less.
Now they have drones.
Drones, yeah. And they're not even decorated. You know.
Yeah, you know. No flag.
At least they could have a face on, a smile or something, you know.
So Maharaj, this notion of aesthetic is very important in Vedic culture.
Yes, because the aesthetic develops finer brain tissues. You know, it's pleasing. It creates upliftment. You know, because if it's nice, you're happy, then it's easier to take part in something. So that's why this concept that kick out all the ornamentation and religion should just be plain and simple is not actually an improvement. Okay, improve management, improve economics, but don't bother aesthetics. You know. Yeah. Yes.
Like if you go just 100 years back, even uniforms are with grand, you know.
Yes.
But now they have camouflage,
yes.
They don't want to be seen.
Yeah. It's interesting, I was reading something the other day about, you know, it's like a very popular around like World War I, all the countries, all the armies, they had the trench coat, that very long, the big lapels, and you can put it up, they're waterproof and everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was actually... The concept had been developed by this company. The head of the company was Burberry, because he worked out the threads. Instead of the normal thing was, is they would make the cloth, the fabric, and then they'd waterproof it. So it comes out very stiff, and as you use it, it becomes softer. It loses its waterproofness. He worked out a way to waterproof the threads and then weave the fabric. So you had something that looked really good, you know, wore really well, and was very waterproof, right? So nowadays, it's like only high-end couture uses Burberry overcoats. But before, that's what the officers in the army wore, you know? Then it caught on in the public, right? You know, but the point was, is like what you're saying, is before, is what we'd call, you know, couture, that was what the army dressed like, you know? And then there were the, you know, the real, you know, your fops and stuff, you know, like that. You know, so. No? Yeah. Like that. So, yeah. So, yeah, it was better when it was worse. Yes.
I always considered plain and simple to be my goodness.
Depends what its application is.
Okay.
It's okay. Take a lily. How many petals in it? No, it means that as it opens, then it gets more and more as it goes in. There's hundreds and hundreds. Does that make sense?
No.
The point is, it's mode of goodness, But it's not, see, simple doesn't mean simpleton. Simple means it's not complicated. Does that make sense? That's the difference. You know? You know, you don't have to be a yokel to be simple. You know? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's the point. The point is it's got to be uncomplicated, and therefore it's practical. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't look nice. Okay. Right? This idea of not looking nice and all that, that's actually a more modern... I mean, one, of course, you have the Protestant element, but then when it comes into aesthetics, I think that's called... We were talking the other day, what was that? Bauhaus. Oh, we were talking Bauhaus. That's, you know... Does the Bau come from, like, what a dog does? Or, you know, I don't know, whatever this dog
comes
house.
From building.
Building. Bauhaus, okay. So it just means building.
No, bauen means like you're building.
So oh, building. Oh, building a house.
Yeah, but it's like it's a house where you are selling the materials for building, basically.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's like warehouse.
Warehouse. But it's an architectural style.
Oh.
Like that. You know. So it is like you see these buildings that are just plain, just glass. Nothing? That's Bauhaus.
Okay.
So I think it came in the 60s. Like that. Fortunately, most of that's fallen down. You know, like that. So it just means having nothing there, and supposedly that's beautiful, even at the expense of being practical. You know? So then it's a problem. Right? You can put sunshades, and it keeps the water off. And things work nice, and you don't have so much problem with, you know, the face of the building and this and that. So Bauhaus does that by, you have the building itself, then you have a whole structure that covers the whole building, and then outside that you have glass. And then you avoid the sun, you avoid the rain, you avoid the this, you avoid the that. You know, maybe 10 times more expensive, but hey, you know. You understand? So simple means for the situation, whatever works. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay.
What's the significance of black horses, lion?
That it's different from what is his grandfather used. You know, so you see what is the aesthetic taste, what is the grandeur of what they use. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, so all black horses, that stands out, or all white horses, that stands out. You know, or Krishna, he's got a blue one, got a green one, got a, you know, then that also works. You know? You know, so like that. It's just, that's why they only bring out that much. They don't get into other details. That's covered in other scriptures. But it's just the aesthetic element. So, you know, he's a devotee, he has taste. So you can understand, Prigat Maharaj has taste.
Some connection between having a black and white
things that look cool. That's another thing. That's just a horse. These are horses. Okay. Of course, his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhishthira, had already formally declared Maharaj Parikshit the emperor of the world. It was still necessary for him to practically establish his supremacy and exact taxes. Maharaj Parikshit subjugated all the kings within the 9 varshas of Jambudvipa, including Bhadrashva, Ketamala, Bharata, Uttarakuru, Kimpurusha, and so on. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada writes, Bhadrashva. It is attractive land near Meru Parvata. It extends from Gandamandana Parvata to the saltwater ocean. There is a description of this Varsha in the Mahabharata, Bhishma Parva 7.14.18. The description was narrated by Sanjay to Dhritarashtra. Ketumala. This earth planet is divided into 7 dvipas by 7 seas. And the central dvipa, called Jambudvip, is divided into 9 varshas or parts. By 8 huge mountains. Bharadvarsha is one of the above mentioned 9 varshas, and Ketumala is also described as one of the above varshas. It is said that in Ketumala Varsha, women are the most beautiful. This varsha was conquered by Arjuna also. A description of this part of the world is available in the Mahabharata. Shabha Parva, okay, 28:6. It is said that this part of the world is situated on the western side of the Meru Parvata, and inhabitants of this province used to live up to 10,000 years. Bhishma Parvata 6:31. Human beings living in this part of the globe are all of golden color, and the women resemble the angels of heaven. The inhabitants are free from all kinds of diseases and grief. Bharata Varsha. This part of the world is also one of the nine Varshas of Jambudvipa. A description of Bharata Varsha is given in Mahabharata, Bhishma Parva, chapters 9 and 10. In the center of Jambudvipa is Ilavritavarsh, and south of Ilavritavarsh is Harivarsha. The description of these Varshas is given in the Mahabharata, Shabha Parva, 28:7-8, as follows. It is mentioned here that the women in both these Varshas are beautiful, and some of them are equal to the Apsaras, or heavenly women. Uttarakuru. According to Vedic geography, the northernmost portion of Jambudvipa is called Uttarakuru Varsha. It is surrounded by the saltwater ocean from three sides and divided by Sringavan Mountain from the Hiranmaya Varsha. Kimpurusha. It is stated to be situated north of the great Himalayan mountain. It is 80,000 miles in length and height, and which covers 16,000 miles in width. These parts of the world were also conquered by Arjuna, Shabha Parva 28:1-2. The Kimpurushas are descendants of a daughter of Daksha. When Maharaj Yudhishthira performed a horse sacrifice, yajna, the inhabitants of these countries were also present to take part in the festival, and they paid tributes to the emperor. This part of the world is called Kimpurusha Varsha, or sometimes the Himalayan provinces, Himavati. It is said that Sukadev Goswami was born in these Himalayan provinces, and that he came to Bharat Varsha after crossing the Himalayan countries. In other words, Maharaj Parikshit conquered all the world. He conquered all the continents adjoining all the seas and oceans in all directions, namely the eastern, western, northern, and southern parts of the world. So it's even beyond what we generally understand as. Let's see. Wherever he traveled, Maharaj Parikshit was welcomed with speeches that were full of the glories of his illustrious forefathers and Lord Krishna. He would simply reward the reciters. Indeed, by hearing of how Lord Krishna had obliged his grandfathers by becoming their chariot driver, messenger, friend, spiritual master, and servant, considering himself to be younger in years, Maharaj Parikshit became overwhelmed with feelings of devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. 12-16. Srila Prabhupada comments. Kings and great personalities of the state are presented with welcome addresses. This is a system from time immemorial, and Maharaj Parikshit, since he was one of the well-known emperors of the world, was also presented with addresses of welcome in all parts of the world as he visited those places. The subject matter of those welcome addresses was Krishna. Krishna means Krishna and his eternal devotees, as the king means the king and his confidential associates. Krishna and his unalloyed devotees cannot be separated, and therefore, glorifying the devotee means glorifying the Lord and vice versa. Maharaj Parikshit would not have been glad to hear about the glories of his forefathers, like Maharaj Yudhishthira and Arjuna, had they not been connected with the acts of Lord Krishna. So you notice that the Bhagavatam is going down. They go through all these lines of kings, and so there's something that will connect to Krishna. Then they bring it out. Right? So there's some value. But otherwise, then, it is just a list of kings.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Related to this, Bhagavatam says that Vedic culture used to be all over the world.
Yes.
And we hear about kings conquering the world, Maharaj Parikshit going everywhere.
Yes.
But it seems that everything we hear about pastimes, it's always happening in what we call India today. It doesn't seem to have a description of what was the language just today, the United States or South America or Russia.
Who's over there?
That's my point.
No, but the point is that you go there, means you have people. I mean, it's like mentions the Kimpurushas, but the Kimpurushas are forest dwellers. Right? They're powerful. They're not ordinary.
So, if we go back 5,000, 10,000, 50,000 years, this planet wasn't really that much populated. Is that a fact? Or?
Means, in other words, the tribals were less in some areas, but these others were more. But it's just you don't see their kingdoms at this point. You go up into the Himalayas, you fly over the Himalayas, you only see snow. That's
right.
It. So you just don't see the rest of it. You don't. We know who sees Meru. Meru goes right on through. Keeps on going up. You know, when Prabhupada was flying, I think in Europe, he mentioned about the Alps. He could see them just keep on going until, you know, up to Meru. You know, so it's that these things are, you're allowed to see these things. One can say, no, but why can't we see? It's just like place an ant in your living room. It can't really see anything. And even if it crawls on your, you know, how you say, hand-carved, you know, wherever it's from, you know, wooden table, it still won't know what it is or what it's for or what you do at it or what are the conversations that go on there. So that's the whole point, is man, due to his ego, he thinks he should be able to see everything, but he can't.
I mean, there are increasing findings, especially Russia and China, of remnants of Vedic culture. They find deities on Earth. They find all sorts of things.
No, they find all kinds of things. It'll come up in the news, and then you'll never hear of it again.
Yeah.
You know. So the whole point is these things come up, but no one makes the connection, right? They find one bone. And they construct this whole animal. It goes into the textbooks. All the kids have to read about it. And worst part, they have to memorize the name. You know? Like that. Before it was easier. Brontosaurus or Tyrannus Rex. You know, simpler names. Now they got these big, all long names. Like that.
I find a 50-meter long skeleton of Gatotkacha.
Yeah. You know, then what do they do with that? You know? You know, they'll turn him into a dinosaur, right? You know, because anything that big's got to be a dinosaur, right? You know? So, the difficulty comes is that they see all these things, just like they I think it was back in the 80s, I think, they were doing diving outside of Gujarat. And they found Dwarka.
Yeah, yes.
But then you never hear of it again. You know, and archaeologists from around the world. I mean, the amount of stuff that's on this side of the planet is so much greater. But basically, they don't come farther, you know, west east than, you know, let's say, you know, Jerusalem. They can dig around a bit. You know, Turkey. Now that's a great place to dig around. You know, like that. But you know, so it's, you know, Africa, of course. You know, like that. But it's, they just don't do these things, because then it would establish this as the center of civilization, which is so obvious. So much information, they won't do it. So there's a bias. So it's just, you know, you have to wait until somebody preaches to the Indologists and converts them, rather than become Indologists and not convert them.
They don't want to know about the past.
They just don't want to know about the past. It's not about knowing what the past is. I mean, that was the whole thing with, you know, the hidden archaeology. So he shows as much as there's things that there's the other way. There's so much, you know. But it's just, you know, they have their theories, and who's sitting in the seat, he's the man. And you have to wait until he dies and give it a few generations.
Yeah.
The Lord descends specifically to deliver his devotees, Paritra Naya Sadhu Nam, Bhagavad Gita 4:8. The devotees are glorified by the presence of the Lord, because they cannot live for a moment without the presence of the Lord and his different energies. The Lord, because the point is the Lord and his energies, so it's connected to the Lord. The Lord and what's connected to the Lord. So his energies, his dham, his internal potency, his pastimes, his qualities. The Lord is present for the devotee by his acts and glories. And therefore, Maharaj Parikit felt the presence of the Lord when he was glorified by his acts, especially when he was saved by the Lord in the womb of his mother. Right, so these acts and glories, then they go very well with this situation of welcoming, you know, administrative heads of state. Right? Because then it's always something grand and great, and the Lord is always grand and great, so they go together very well. All such acts of the Lord are mentioned in the address of welcome, and Maharaj Parikit, in full satisfaction, rewarded those who presented such addresses. Because if you don't, then they'll go out and have to get a job down at the local factory. Right? The difference between the presentation of welcome addresses today and in those days is that formerly the welcome addresses were presented to a person like Maharaj Parikit. The welcome addresses were full of facts and figures, and those who presented such addresses were sufficiently rewarded. Whereas in the present day, the welcome addresses are not presented not always with factual statements, but to please the post holder. And often they are full of flattering lies. And rarely are those who present such welcome addresses rewarded by the poor receiver. Yeah, you don't want too many facts. In his purports to this section, Srila Prabhupada notes the depth of the relationship between Krishna and his unalloyed devotees, the Pandavas. Lord Krishna is everything to the unalloyed devotees like the Pandavas. The Lord was for them the Supreme Lord, the spiritual master, the worshipable deity, the guide, the chariot driver, the friend, the servant, the messenger, and everything they could conceive of. And thus, the Lord also reciprocated the feelings of the Pandavas. Maharaj Parikit was a pure devotee of the Lord. Maharaj Parikit, as a pure devotee of the Lord, could appreciate the Lord's transcendental reciprocation of the feelings of his devotees, and thus he himself also was overwhelmed with the dealings of the Lord. Simply by appreciating the dealings of the Lord with his pure devotees, one can attain salvation. The Lord's dealings with his devotees appear to be ordinary human beings, human dealings, but one who knows them in truth becomes at once eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. Right? So just by hearing, you can get liberated. Yeah. And then knowing them, you know, properly, then one can go back to Godhead. The Pandavas were so malleable to the will of the Lord that they could sacrifice any amount of energy for the service of the Lord. And by such unalloyed determination, they could secure the Lord's mercy in any shape they desired. So it's because they were completely surrendered to the Lord, we see the Lord is completely surrendered to them. This idea is like, why I should surrender, why I should trust. But the point is the greater the surrender, the greater the benefit. As long as who you're surrendering to is as character. Right? Beginning from verse 17, Suta Goswami shifts the topic. So now it's about the devotee, that has been about the devotees. You know, in other words, the topic connected to the Lord is of value. But if it's not, it's not so important.
Kumaran?
Yes.
It means that to glorify one devotee means to glorify Krishna.
Same. Yes, because you'll always have to mention the devotee in connection to Krishna, and Krishna always is doing things in connection with the devotees. So they'll always go together. You can't glorify one without the other. Does that make sense? Like say, the spiritual master is representative of Krishna.
Yes.
So it means you're making the connection. Yeah. Like that. Okay, shifts the topic. Now you may hear from me of what happened while Maharaj Parikit was passing his days, hearing of the good occupations of his forefathers and being absorbed in thoughts of them. Meanwhile, Dharma, the personality of religion, was wandering about in the form of a bull. He came upon Bhumi, the goddess of the earth, who was in the form of a cow. Footnote 4. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary to verse 18. The moment that Kali Yuga had started, Dharma, the earth, and Kali had assumed these shapes. Oh, okay. The moment that Kali Yuga had started, Dharma, the earth, and Kali had assumed these shapes. Though this was not seen by the people, Parikit, who meditated with the desire to see this, saw it with his mystic eyes. Dharma, in the form of a bull, asked questions to the cow who had lost her effulgence. Okay. Noticing her eyes were filled with tears and her bodily luster was faded, so that she appeared to be like a mother that had lost her child, Dharma inquired, footnote 5. Srila Prabhupada writes, "The bull is the emblem of the moral principle, and the cow is a representative of the earth. When the bull and the cow are in a joyful mood, it is to be understood that the people of the world are also in a joyful mood. The reason is that the bull helps production of grains in the agricultural field, and the cow delivers milk, the miracle of aggregate food values. The human society, therefore, maintains these two important animals very carefully so that they can wander everywhere in cheerfulness. But at the present moment in this age of Kali, both the bull and the cow are now being slaughtered and eaten up as foodstuff by a class of men who do not know the Brahminical culture." Right, so notice when we say, "Oh, this is what the world's doing in the West," the point is this: no, it's a class of humans, of human society, that doesn't know Brahminical culture. It's not the world; it's just a particular class,
which happened to be the majority.
Yeah, but doesn't mean majority is better.
No,
like that.
We just surrender.
You know, it's just like at the time. You give the example of Socrates and the Stoics. Was it Stoics? No.
Sophists?
Sophists, yes. So, Sophists, there were more Sophists. And there was only, you know, one Socrates. But Socrates was talking about the absolute. And they were talking about vox populi. It means whatever the public think is truth, that's truth. So they were more. And they may win. You know, but it doesn't make them any better or any more valuable. The bull and the cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by spreading of Brahminical culture as the topmost perfection of all cultural affairs. So that means that all these anomalies go away if you spread Brahminical culture, not if you spread Western culture. Because Western culture is the culture of those who do not know Brahminical culture. It's simple. Right? Because there's Brahminical culture and then there's something else. So those who know that something else, that's not of what's of value. The Brahminical culture, all the things that people not following Brahminical culture want, the ideals they're looking for are already found in the Brahminical culture. By spreading that, you'll get all those things. But on their own, we look at, you know, their Western culture 3,000 years, it has not actually developed. You know, some things come up and then something else goes down. Right? You know, so that's the thing. It'll never be right. By advancement of such culture, means a Brahminical culture, the morale of society is properly maintained. And so peace and prosperity are also maintained without extraneous effort. Right? So in other words, morality is maintained because of the dharma, of the actual culture. The culture is the dharma. Right? As a side effect of that, then morality, economics, sense gratification, justice, all these things naturally are taken care of. But on their own, if you try to take care of economics on its own without dharma, or ethics without dharma, right? Like this, justice without dharma, sense gratification without dharma, they can't be maintained because their sustainability is the Brahminical culture, is the dharma. Right? They don't function otherwise. You get results. You can get some remnants of results from what you've gotten before, but it won't continue. It's not sustainable. You know, it's just like I plant something in the field, and if I don't replant, there might be a few seeds from the last harvest that might come up like that. But then if I don't, it's just going to disappear. So the whole point is that it's not that the morality is one thing, Brahminical culture is another. Morality is based on Brahminical culture. Otherwise, you don't actually have it. Yes.
How do we? How do we understand Brahminical culture? Like Prabhupada wanted to create a society of Brahmins, essentially, to spread Krishna consciousness. How do we balance out Brahminical culture and Yukta Vairagya?
But what do you mean by Yukta Vairagya?
Well, to use everything in Krishna's service.
But so what is? I mean, so what do you mean by Brahminical culture, and what do you mean by Yukta Vairagya?
We have to use whatever is produced by the world.
No, we don't have to. The world produces high-grade Havana cigars.
And we don't have to use
them. We don't have to, no. We really don't. So you don't have to have a 57 Chevy, you know, with the top down on a sunny day smoking a Havana cigar. You actually don't have to. I hope I didn't just blew your whole, you know, 20-year plan of life here. Yeah.
I mean, we're dealing with products which are an expansion of people's mode of ignorance.
No, no, that's another thing. The point is,
we use them in Krishna's service.
No, we don't have to. It's what's useful, we use. What's not, we don't. Like, it's just like when you go into a supermarket. What do you buy?
Frozen peas.
Okay, but that's what you're going to use. But what about, you know, what about the kumquats? You know? Yeah, you're not buying any of those. Who buys kumquats? Does anybody know who buys kumquats? Huh? You buy kumquats.
What?
Kumquats?
No. I see them, but I don't know who buys them. Somebody must buy them. You know, so the whole thing is that you don't say, I have to buy everything in the shop. You only take what you need. So the whole point is in the world, we say, the world's producing these, we have to use them. No, you don't. You use whatever is useful. Because you go into a store, you only buy what's useful to you. You don't buy everything. You know? Right? You know, you go into a Tesco, you don't buy everything in there. You buy what you need. So what you can engage, that's what you buy. So the same way as Yukta Vairagya means what you can engage in Krishna's service that's useful, you use it. And otherwise, you don't bother. It's not, you know. Is that true? Otherwise, then, you know, we better start having people there, you know, down at the end of the runways, you know, there in Paris and Milan, and that when shows are going on to, you know, buy those things to engage them in Krishna service, and we have to. There's a whole misunderstanding of what Brahminical culture and Yukta Vairagya mean. They're just words to people. Brahminical culture is taken to mean a class of people who maintain themselves who are engaged in Brahminical occupational duties. No, that's Brahmins within the Brahminical culture. Brahminical culture means that culture that is dedicated to Brahman. That's the Vedic culture. So everyone in the Vedic system is following Brahminical culture. Then you have those who have a Brahminical occupation. So the point of having Brahmins is they establish Brahminical culture. So you have a small group of Brahmins who are trained as Brahmins. They can influence the world to follow Brahminical culture. Not that the world becomes Brahmins by occupation. Right? They will stay in whatever position they're in. They don't have to change.
So the Shudras are part of Brahminical.
They're all part of Brahminical culture. That's why they're human. That's why we refer to outside the Vedic culture as tribals. Like that. They may be sophisticated, they may be in an Armani suit, but they're still tribals. I mean, think about it, right? We're sitting here going, wow, he's got a cashmere suit, okay? But the point is cashmere goats, that's all they ever wear. They don't wear anything else. Right? Right? So it's not that it's that uncommon. right? You can be an animal and have a cashmere suit. Hey, you know, it's not that, you know. So this is the thing, is that devotees are projecting what they think of, but not actual the reality of how it's being explained and how it's being practiced. Because there's millions of people who practice the Brahminical culture. One can see from them how it's done. But that's not, we're not looking in those directions. We'll look to the karmis for, you know, practical things. We won't look to followers of the Vedic culture for practical things. Oh, that's all Maya. Somehow or another, Vedic is always Maya. But Western is never Maya. It's all Yukta Vairagya. How does that work? Isn't that called duality? And duality is known, another term for duality is mundane. Right. So this is the point. And yukta vairagya means yukta, it's connected to the Lord. And vairagya means without any attachment on your side. So if it's not nice, why is the guy wearing, you know, dress casuals? Not because it's yukta vairagya, because he's attached to dress casuals. And he's wearing them and he's chanting Hare Krishna. Fine, great. But it's not that his wearing of pants is yukta vairagya. That's just... he in his position is engaging himself in the Lord's service. So its only connection is because it's connected to him. But it's not that on its own it is yukta vairagya. That's just, these are just terms used to make Maya look okay. You know, like that. It means, you know, we have to remember, Kali Raj knows Sanskrit. Kali Raj himself follows Vedic culture. You know, what he does down here, that's his job. It's not that he goes home and does all this stuff. There's a good chance Kali Raj himself is not a meteor. But it's his business to take care of Kali that everybody else does. You know, it's kind of like, what is it? You know, what were we talking before? Is it about Star TV?
Murdoch,
right? You know? Somebody complained about the quality of stuff on his channel. And, you know, don't you think it's ruining the youth in that? And he just looked very frankly at the journalist and says, well, I don't let my kids watch him. So if you think it's nonsense, why would you let your kids watch him? So that means if people are watching it, that means they don't have any values. He says, for me, it's business. He says, I wouldn't let my kids watch it. You know, so, you know, Kali does like that. It's his job. He takes care of that. But he himself, he doesn't live like that. So that's the whole thing. So he's masquerading as a leader of society and then doing nonsense. So that's Kali Yuga. So just because one is a devotee and does that, that doesn't make it any better. So one has to be very, very careful there. Is that these terms are just used, but the actual meaning of them is not understood. Right? And if they're understood, then everything falls into place very easily. But unless someone's willing to understand, one can't understand. And that's generally the greatest obstacle. It means Vedic culture, being in the mode of goodness, is naturally hard to understand for those coming from a background of passion and ignorance. But then we make it more complicated by not having faith in it. Therefore, why would, since it's Krishna's culture, why would Krishna reveal that? So those who can't understand its validity means Krishna hasn't revealed how it works. And that's because they don't want to know. Not because they're, you know, not intelligent enough to know. It's that they don't want to know. Because any devotee is intelligent enough to know. Yes.
So if you're going to make some bhata for Krishna and you have no...
some bhanda.
Bhata.
Some bhata. Okay, bhata. Okay.
and you have an electric mixer. So if you were to use that, is that following Brahminical culture, or do you have to have one of those, like, you know, things with the...
Church.
Yeah.
That means you're just coming straight from this, or you're, this came up in a conversation with Betty?
No, I'm trying to get understanding. I just made this up.
You just made it up.
Yeah.
You never. You didn't talk to Betty.
Just didn't. I mean, I know someone who's got one of those things, but.
But her name's not Betty.
No. Okay.
My aunt, where I stayed at my grandfather's place, she used to make butter with that.
Okay. But is it Brahminical culture to
the point is Brahminical culture is to make butter and use butter and offer it to Krishna. That's the Brahminical culture. Now, if you have the facility and the inclination, the ability to use the traditional churning things, then that's nice. You know, there'll be something special about it. The taste and everything will be unique than if you make it by machine. Anything that's hand done always has a different, it's different than when it's machine made.
But it's not necessary to be considered Brahminical culture.
Brahminical culture is the principle. It's a set of principles. Like that. That was one interesting thing. Hridayananda made that point. Vedic culture is a set of principles.
It's goodness.
Huh?
It's goodness.
Yes. Principles and goodness to apply. Then according to the situation you apply it. So the point is, do you have one of those machines? If you do, you use it. If you don't, then you use a blender or whatever else you have.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It's just that the blender came from Ugra Karma.
It came from, but the point is the principle is there.
Yeah.
So is Ugra Karma the principle?
No.
So that's the mistake devotees make.
Okay.
Is they think that the sinful life has substance. Maya has substance. Therefore, someone does something wrong, oh, that's a big deal. It's not about that. It's about what's the big deal is the principle not being followed. Right? Because the point is, if someone does a sinful activity, what's the real problem?
The mentality.
Because it's not connected to Krishna. Right? That's the real problem. Then one can say, oh, then if we connect it to Krishna, is it okay? He says, yeah, but then who's going to connect it to Krishna? If you're smart enough to connect a sinful activity to Krishna, then you're smart enough to not see the need to engage that sinful activity and to use a pious activity. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why the lower down it goes, if they'll follow anything to do with the Brahminical culture, then that's great. They're improving themselves. So it's not about the form, it's about your purpose. But because the purpose is what you're trying to obtain, the forms are the way to obtain it, then the forms and activities also are connected. So in other words, you're making butter to do Krishna, please Krishna, but you know, you're sitting in some, you know, how you say, New York apartment or something, then you may not have the space to put one of those things, you know, or the time. Right? So therefore you use a blender. And if you're actually using a blender to make butter, these days that would probably be pretty good. Probably out of the, you know, hundreds of thousands of devotees on the planet, there's probably a good chance that you could probably count those making their own butter on one hand. So I wouldn't worry about it.
As the illustration problem on the morning walk, and he points in the park, he tells everybody, what plant is that? So they said, this is a flower, it's got fragrance. He said, what plant is that? She's got a beautiful flower, it's very nice for decorating. And he said, what's that one? And the devotee said, this is a weed, it's useless. And Prabhupada says, no, you're useless. This is Krishna's creation. There is a use for it, but you don't know. You're useless, that's useful.
Yes. In Ayurveda, there was one very famous Ayurvedic teacher. And then when he finished his training of one of his disciples, he gave him it's kind of a little bit like the Duryodhana and Drona thing, you know. He gave him the Nirani, the little hand hoe thing, and told him, there's this hill next to the ashram, go around the whole hill and bring me any herb or any plant, anything that is not useful for Ayurveda. So the guy was out all day, came back at night, and said, I searched the whole hill and every herb is you can use. And then he was graduated. That was the final test. So the point is it all has a connection, but you have to know what it's for. So the whole thing is, but it doesn't mean that it's your duty to use it. See, everything has a value, but everyone has their duty. You know what I'm saying? That limits what it is within the creation that you work with. Like the young, beautiful girl. Okay. But then whose duty is that? Her father? Her prospective husband? It's not someone else's duty. So if you're not her father or going to marry her, then it's not your duty. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It's like there's so many cars out there, but one of the cars, you know, is your car. So it's your duty to take care of that and drive that, not all the other cars.
And Maharaj, can we use the same principle in using other traditions to become Krishna conscious?
You can, but other the point is the other traditions, how much knowledge is there? So in other words, what knowledge is there, great, but then the Vedanta will add to that and make it of value. And so then, naturally, as the knowledge there, then those elements that are good, like you respect the Lord for having arranged everything. But at the same time, as then there might be a higher level way of you doing it. But if not, at least those ones that are not going to be a distraction. You can, but it's just the Vedanta is so much quicker. But all, Prabhupada mentions, all the religions of the world, they're all dealing with the absolute truth. It's just people don't understand. Because right? Otherwise they could read through the same books and get the same understandings that we're having. But they're not. They're ending up with something else because of their particular conditioning. And so, you know, that works for that people in that area. Like that. Is that something? Yeah. Yes.
If somebody is doing if a devotee is doing whatever activity, whatever they're doing, and then you say to them, how are you connecting this to Krishna? And then they make something up, like on the spot. Does that mean they've been connecting it to Krishna, or they haven't?
See, the general principle is ask no questions, hear no lies. Right? If it's not your business, don't ask. In other words, you create anxiety for yourself by always inquiring about everybody else's lifestyle. Worry about your lifestyle. Then you don't have to worry about everybody else's, and then you're not in anxiety. All that time that you're spending talking to them, trying to convince them, being anxiety, being confused, you could be studying the books or chanting your japa or associating with those who don't bring up such funny questions. You understand? In other words, you don't go out of your way to look for trouble. Right? It's not a service. That make sense?
Quality control.
Huh?
It's a quality control of
Yeah, we have. Then you can always mention a good quality control, and they can take care of it.
I wanted that job. They didn't give me.
Now you can go apply. I'm sure that they.
I asked them.
Oh. You're determined. Keep at it. No one wants the job. Okay. We're still in this footnote 5, or are we finished? Okay. When Brahminical culture deteriorates, the cow and bull are mistreated, and the resultant actions are predominant by the following symptoms. Doesn't mention the following symptoms.
No.
That was footnote 5. Oh, good lady, what is the cause of your grief? Are you suffering from some disease? Are you thinking of some relative who is far away in a distant place? Are you lamenting for me because I have lost three of my legs? Are you in anxiety because henceforth the meat eaters will exploit you? Are you aggrieved that the demigods no longer receive sacrificial offerings, and thus other dependent living beings are suffering from drought and famine? Are you feeling compassion for the poor women and children that have been left forlorn by unscrupulous men? Or are you unhappy to see how the goddess of learning is being mishandled by so-called brahmanas, who are addicted to all kinds of sinful habits? Are you sorry to see how the genuine brahmins are forced to take shelter of kings that no longer have respect for brahminical culture? Such administrative heads are now under the influence of Kali. Consequently, the state affairs are all in disorder. Are you unhappy because of this, or because the general populace no longer follows the regular principles that govern eating, sleeping, and mating? Thus, they perform these acts unrestrictedly. Right? So these are all. One is the thing, but they're all points of understanding that these causes grief, right? Because they create a disturbance. So here it's in relationship to Bhumi that she will feel bad seeing it. But in actuality, those who take part in it are also suffering. Seventeen to 22. In his purport to this section, Srila Prabhupada describes the inauspicious symptoms of the modern age. The people of the world in this age of Kali are always full of anxieties, right? It's a result because of not doing what they did before. Everyone is diseased with some kind of ailment. Some from the very faces of the people of this age, one can find out the index of the mind. Everyone feels the absence of the relative who is away from home. Because before it was everything worked very simply, everything could be done close by. Now it's so you have to go everywhere else to get something done. You know, as you mentioned, it was something like, I forget what it was, 40% or 60%. I think of the Australian production is sent overseas, and then they import what they require. You know, go figure. But whatever it is, so the point is you end up having to work in other places or be far away to get anything accomplished. While before you could do it, you know, in your own place. The particular symptom of the age of Kali is that no family is now blessed to live together, right? And people don't know it. In the West, it's they've just come to live with it. In India, it's always proud. Oh, yes, you know, okay, you know, family, okay, so, you know, where are they? Oh, yes, no, you know, me and my wife are here, you know, the son's in Chicago, and the daughter is studying in London, and this one and that, and they're thinking it's great, but then they're not together, you know? But somehow or another, they think it's great. You know, give them a few more generations, and they may figure it out. There are sufferings from internal diseases, separation from those near and dear, and anxieties for maintaining the status quo. So on top of that, then you have to keep up to what everybody else does. Right? You can't just live simply. If you live simply, everyone will criticize. What is this? You know, you don't have. You know, you're poor. You know, like that. Yeah. These are but some important factors which make the people of this age always unhappy. 1.16.19 purport. With the progress of the age of Kali, four things particularly, namely the duration of life, mercy, the power of recollection, and moral or religious principles, will gradually diminish. Since Dharma, or the principles of religion, would be lost in the portion of three out of four, the symbolic bull was standing on one leg only. When three-fourths of the population of the world become irreligious, the situation is converted into hell for the animals. In the age of Kali, godless civilizations will create so many so-called religious societies in which the personality of Godhead will be directly or indirectly defied. And thus, faithless societies of men will make the world uninhabitable for the saner section of people. Beef is forbidden in the scriptures, and the bulls and cows are offered special protection by followers of the Vedas. But in this age of Kali, people will exploit the body of the bull and cow as they like, and thus will invite sufferings of various types. 1:16:20 purport. I think it was until the Europeans came to Japan, you know, even though they're meat eaters, you know, that means they're serious about like this. But they would never bother the cow. It's just something that just wasn't done. So the Europeans came, they introduced life. Also, one devotee was telling me in Italy, before World War II, before the Americans were there, that they themselves, they didn't eat much meat. It was mostly, you know, pasta and stuff like that, only on special occasions. It was only then they learned from Americans that it was something that you ate every day. That was, you know, the status quo here, being prestigious. You know, so it's like, it's not that these things weren't unknown, even in what we call the world, a non-Vedic world. Most of the non-Vedic world dealt very differently.
How can the Bhagavatam state that the last leg standing is truthfulness, right?
Yes.
No one's truthful. It's finished.
No, but the degree that it's there is that the degree that it can run. As we gave the example of, you can walk into these very, you know, let's say high-end shops where they have very expensive things there, and you can take them, you can touch them, you can deal with them, and if you want one, then you know, then you pay, then you know, like that. But there are ones where you can't get into the shop. At the door, there's a counter at the door. You can't go in. You want anything, you put the money on the counter. Once you put the money and it's been counted, they'll go and get what you want. So that's the difference in truth. Because truth is there, you can function. You know, a credit card, that's based on truth. You know, you get on a bus, it's going to a certain place, that's based on truth. You know what I'm saying? If you get on, you know, it's like you get on, you know, how you say, depending on where you are, you get in a taxi or this and that. It's not necessarily it's going to go to where you want it, depending on what part of the world it's in. You know? So the problem is the truth is less, therefore it's a problem. So to that degree it's there, you see the influence of Kali Yuga is a little bit less. And where it's not, then it's more. That's the whole thing. So that's what's left.
Yeah, pretty much it boils down to the bus ticket.
The bus?
At least we know it's truthful when you pay for your bus ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything else is Christian.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If you don't, jump on the bus driver, bash him up.
Well, that's another thing. Then that's the problem. The people on the bus, it's not going to where they said because you're not, you know, following the truth that this bus is going to there. You know, it's one thing if, you know, it's like this. If you want to do it properly, you drop everyone off first, then take the bus. Right? You know, that would be honest.
Huh?
Yeah. So, you know, you drop everybody off, then you... So it's 3/4 of the population. Then it goes. So 3/4 is what has the strong influence. So this is again, Prabhupada's using the 3/4. So that's what creates the major prominence. In the age of Kali, the women and children, along with Brahmins and cows, will be grossly neglected and left unprotected. In this age, illicit connection with women will render many women and children uncared for. Circumstantially, the women will try to become independent of the protection of men, and marriage will be performed as a matter of formal agreement between men and women. Right? And then we'll say, this is good. It's just a symptom of Kali Yuga. But, you know, we'll champion these things. In most cases, the children will not be taken care of properly. The Brahmins are traditionally intelligent men, and thus they will be able to pick up modern education to the topmost rank. But as far as moral and religious principles are concerned, they shall be the most fallen. So they're smart enough to do the skill aspect of education, but not the character. That's the point. So your intelligent class is being engaged in duties of the intelligent class, but only half of them. Only the skill part, not the character part. Education and bad character go ill together, but such things will run parallel. The administrative heads, as a class, will condemn the tenets of Vedic wisdom and will prefer to conduct a so-called secular state. Because then it's like you can do what you want. Otherwise, you're always restricted. Mm-hmm. Point of administrator, they don't like to be restricted. So then the religion restricts, so they don't like it. So if you separate the two, then the idea is it'll be more efficient. Yes, you do what you want, but in the long run, we see it's not that the states are prosperous. And the so-called educated Brahmins will be purchased by such unscrupulous administrators. Right? So then they'll teach what it is they want to teach. Even a philosopher and writer of many books on religious principles may also accept an exalted post in government, which denies all the moral codes of the Shastras. Right? So he takes the position in a post that denies everything that he's written books on. The Brahmins are specifically restricted from accepting such service. But in this age, they will not only accept service, but they will do so even if it is to the meanest quality. These are some of the symptoms of the Kali Age, which are harmful to the general welfare of human society, 116.21 purport. So he's saying these are symptoms of Kali Yuga. You know, so we should be very careful not to take them as standard, and then not only standard, then even profess. We have to be very, very careful.
Separation between the church and the state, you know, which occurred around 15th, 16th century. And they could not coexist anymore because the church was always, you know, telling them what to do. So they split. And then, you know, the kings could do whatever they want.
Yes.
But then the church also did whatever they wanted. They were as corrupt as the state.
No, the point is that the state is guided by, the point is the religion doesn't control the government. It simply gives advice that they're following eternal principles in applying their administration. But it's not done or controlled by the church. And the same time is the administration doesn't control the religious aspect. They simply create the protection in which it functions.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that's missing in the non-Vedic applications, is that at that the difficulty came because it was figured out quite early that the Pope was the most powerful position. So then the people in the position of the Pope weren't necessarily the most pious. And so then you come up, and then it's those who are powerful and rich. So they would come up from the aristocracy or from the nobility. I guess there's even, I think it's the, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but Borgias or?
Oh, the Borgias. Yeah.
Borgias. Yeah. But there's huge amount of their family, some of them even because of that, not wanting to be identified with it. Then they change the spelling of their name so you don't actually know that they're the same family. Like that. Because I think the original is B-O-G. But someone used a J and other things. So they change the spelling so you don't can make the connection. Because it was just, you know, it was just power and money. So naturally then they control the state, then there's a problem here. You know, then better they just be the administrative head. You know, then they have the responsibility. Otherwise, they just get what they want from it, and at the same time, the others. You know, so it's a mess. The point is the religion doesn't control; it only guides. So there's no control either way.
And in the Brahmanical system, the Brahmins have the power to remove the king.
They do, but the point is there's always the system. You only put in someone as a king who has the qualifications.
Right.
Then there's no need to remove it.
Yes.
You know. So that was discussed before. Prabhupada made the point is that the common person elects people, but they don't have qualification. Therefore, they elect someone who's not worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But if the leadership puts up for election someone who is worth administrating, then the common person votes for this one or that one, then it doesn't matter which one they vote in. They'll both be of character, of standard. You know? In other words, there has to be leadership that establishes what is the standard. Then the has to be administered. Then the common person will live according to that, and then they'll be happy. Because as we see, the unhappiness of the people is coming from these effects of Kali Yuga by not doing these things. Yes?
What is it in the modern educational system that makes it so that the character is not developed? Because if you're going just back 100 years, like most educational systems in the West were not based on political culture, but they still have the basis.
It was based on religion.
Yes.
Why don't you steal?
Because God says.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why don't you go off with your neighbor's wife? Because God said. What about his donkey? Right? Because God said. You know, why don't you speak with bad language? Right? Because God said. You understand? So, in other words, they were teaching, in other words, what they taught was secular, but the character with which they taught it and the character they expected from the students in receiving it and dealing with it had to be of standard according to religion. So as that becomes less and less, you find the quality of the student body, the quality of the education, the quality of the society, it gets less and less. They're not intelligent enough to understand they're connected. So therefore, just that much will keep some of the morality there. Now, we're talking about real education, you have the knowledge of the soul. So then you're talking about a much higher level of education. So, there are some necessities of life on par with those of the lower animals, and they are eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. These animal demands are for both the human beings and the animals, but the human being has to fulfill such desires not like the animals, but like a human being. A dog can mate with a bitch before the public eyes without hesitation, but if a human being does so, the act will be considered a public nuisance, and the person will be criminally prosecuted. Therefore, for the human being, there are some rules and regulations, even for fulfilling common demands. The human society avoids such rules and regulations when it is bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali. Right? So, we're saying, oh, we don't have to follow these things. Boys, girls can do whatever they want, like that. Then the thing is then you get the effect. Everything falls apart. There's no social fabric. There's no family. It's the same thing. All it was is the Vedic was so that you like the idea of family staying together, this is how it works. That you like to have a nice relationship between parents and the children and between, you know, one sibling and another, this is how it works. You don't want to follow it, hey, Baba's already defined how Kali Yuga works. And that's what you get. You can't not follow it and get the result. You know, I can't say I'm going to not cook dinner and then I'm magically going to sit down at table and have a fabulous meal. It's not going to happen. You don't cook. You have nothing to eat. You know? Like that. So it's just the way it works. You know, there's recipes. The recipe says put in a pinch of salt and you put in half a kilo. There's going to be a problem. You know? So if you don't follow the recipe, it doesn't work. And the point is, since it's God's creation, as Prabhupada mentioned, you know, a few pages before, these dharmashastras, manu, always work. All times, all places. There's no such thing as, oh, it's Kali Yuga, they don't work. No. In Kali Yuga, people don't follow them. That's why it's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga isn't imposed. Kali Yuga is voluntarily accepted. You follow. It's not Kali Yuga for you. You don't follow, it is Kali Yuga. It's that simple. Right?
Same thing for Maya.
Same thing for Maya. She doesn't impose, she just offers. She presents. You take it. She doesn't offer you anything you don't want. Yeah.
She makes a good presentation.
Pretty good.
But it's like this. What is she offering you to eat? What's she offering a pig to eat? You understand? So the pig goes for it. She doesn't offer that to you because you won't. She'll only offer you what you'll go for. Because you walk down the street, there's unlimited food down on the street, but you only notice certain things. Those are the ones that Maya's offering. Everything else is, that's not yours. So she's not offering it. It's not your Maya. But she only offers what, she only offers what she knows you'll take.
Very personal.
Right, yeah. And so therefore, you know, his Maya knows what you want.
It's a very personal relationship.
Yes, it's a personal relationship. That's why it's so hard to break. I've had this relationship since time immemorial. Yeah. Okay. Therefore, for the human beings, there are some rules and regulations, even for fulfilling common demands. The human society avoids such rules and regulations when it is bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali. In this age, people are indulging. Does that make sense? It's not like, okay, this is the way it is, deal with it. It's that it presents it, you take it, then you get the results. But this, you know, we're presenting it as like, you know, we're sitting in the middle of the ocean, you got to swim. No, it's like we're standing outside, you know, the building that has the pool in it, and then we walk in. Oh, what to do? It was here. The door was open. You know? In this age, people are indulging in such necessities of life without following the rules and regulations. And this deterioration of social and moral rules is certainly lamentable because of the harmful effects of such beastly behavior. Right? Because there's harmful effects. It's not that it just doesn't happen. That's the thing. Our idea, I can do what I want, that's illusory. The reality of the results, that's real. In this age, the fathers and guardians are not happy with the behavior of their wards. They should know that so many innocent children are victims of bad association awarded by the influence of this age of Kali. We know from the Srimad Bhagavatam that Ajamil, an innocent son of a Brahmin, was walking down a road and saw a Shudra pair sexually embracing. This attracted the boy, right? So that's why you're not supposed to do it on the road. Right? And later on, the boy became a victim of all debaucheries. From a pure Brahmin, he fell down to the position of a wretched urchin. And it was all due to bad association. There was but one victim, like Ajamil, in those days. Because right? That's the meaning. Ajamil never had it before, won't happen again. Right? You know. But in this age of Kali, the poor innocent students are daily victims of cinemas which attract men only for sex indulgence. The so-called administrators are all untrained in the affairs of a Kshatriya. The Kshatriyas are meant for administration, as the Brahmins are meant for knowledge and guidance. The word Kshatriya Bandhu refers to the so-called administrators or persons promoted to the post of the administrator without proper training by culture and tradition. Right? So that's here. But proper training by culture and tradition. Then there's, you know, specific skills. Like, in other words, a Kshatriya, he was trained in the Gurukul. So then he learned the culture and the knowledge. Right? Then, and he learned the Shastric elements. Then from there, in the palace, he would learn the practical, unless it was like Drona ran a Gurukul specifically for Kshatriyas. But if it's not one of those Gurukuls, then from the generals, from the prime minister, from the different, then he'll learn the very practical aspects under their training. But he already has the character that that's based on. But if you try to learn the skills without the character, then what's the difference with anybody else? You won't get any more result than they're getting. Nowadays, so it's, you know, and this thing that Mahabharata mentions, tradition. Tradition means what works. And that comes down from the past. Nowadays, they are promoted to such exalted posts by the votes of people who are themselves fallen in the rules and regulations of life. How can such people elect a proper man where they are themselves fallen in the standard of life? Right? The problem is not so much they're elected. The problem is that they don't know, they don't have the qualification to know who to elect. Right? Just like we were saying before, the Polish throne, it was done by election. It was a king, but he was done by election, but only of those who were administrators, because they knew what administration was. They elected who they thought would be the best. So it wasn't hereditary. So election you can use, but then you have to be qualified. Therefore, by the influence of the age of Kali, everywhere, politically, socially, or religiously, everything is topsy-turvy. And therefore, for the sane man, it is all regrettable, not yukta-vairagyable. It's all regrettable. 1:16:22 per court. Okay. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav.